Hello, welcome to the second installment of our IFLR Awards podcast series. In this podcast, we'll be talking about the IFLR Asia Pacific Awards. We'll be reviewing the highlights from this year's research and the themes that stood out to us. And over the course of the podcast, revealing this year's winners in the deal and team categories. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope that you enjoy. I'm James Wilson. I'm responsible for the research across IFLR's global awards, and I'm here with IFLR's managing editor, Lizzie Meager, and IFLR's Asia reporter, Carrie Lai.
Hi, I'm Lizzie. I'm managing editor of IFLR and Practice Insight.
Hi, I'm Carrie. I'm based in Euromoney's offices in Hong Kong.
So this is the second podcast in our award series. The first was to cover the Europe Award winners, and the podcast went out with a winner's announcement, and that was on April 23rd. So the podcast is available on IFLR.com on the website if anyone is interested in listening to that, and it's free to listen to. And I think up until now, I think we've had about 200 downloads of that podcast, and we're very happy with that. That was our first attempt. And also, Lizzie, tell me if I'm wrong, but the page itself had about 4,000 views within 24 hours of the winner's announcement being made. Is that right?
That is right. Yeah, we got more than 4,000 hits on the first day of publication, which is great. So we hope we can do that again.
Yes. So today we're going to talk about the Asia Pacific themes and the highlights from the awards research. And before we get into that, we'll just give a very brief overview of why we're doing this and the sort of the order in which we're going to run through it. The first point is that we can't hold a physical award ceremony this year because of COVID-19. But our hope is that these podcasts bring some life into the awards and inject a little bit of personality, especially at a time when a lot of us are working from home. We also hope that they shine a light on some of the work that happened in 2019, that we recognize that a lot of work was done and that there were some sort of interesting landmarks and new ground covered. It's very difficult not to compare 2019 to the situation we are in at the moment. But the work that was done over the course of the year and that we're recognizing in the awards saw teams and lawyers sort of test the legal frameworks, introduce new instruments and mechanisms, all of which the hope is it should make the market more robust. And we'd assume that these skills are the ones that will be in sort of great need in the sort of months and year to come. And at this point, I'll hand over to Lizzie to take control from now on in, if that's okay, Lizzie.
Thank you, James. So IFLR focuses on legal innovation in cross-border transactions, as everybody will know. We don't care about the size or value of deals. We're looking for transactions that break new legal ground, define new regulatory frameworks, establish new ways of collaborating across borders, or more simply, if that word is the right one, use legal ingenuity to overcome obstacles. So during this podcast, we're going to talk our way through the deal categories, reveal the winning deals and teams, and at the very end, we will reveal winners of the six Firm of the Year awards. And just to reiterate again, this isn't an explanation of why deals or teams are shortlisted or picked as winners. It is more our sort of anecdotal review of the themes that stood out to us. All the decisions of the winners and the shortlist were made by an internal panel of IFLR journalists and researchers. And I also want to say that in the summer edition of IFLR magazine, which will be with you in the summer, obviously, a special awards publication will provide a full write-up of all of the deals shortlisted and all the winning firms and teams. So before we get into it, Carrie, I wondered what are some of the themes that you've been seeing over the past year in your coverage?
One of the big themes we've been focusing on IFLR is the growth of China's capital markets. This growth is evident across both the debt and equity capital markets and in other structured instruments and the securitization market. And just on April 1st this year, China's financial regulators allowed foreign banks to apply for their own onshore securities businesses. And that was actually 8 months earlier than was expected. And this means China is opening its doors to its $21 trillion capital markets. And in addition to that, China's government bonds have also been recently included in benchmark indices, and that will also boost capital inflow. A second theme is the growth of the market is that the growth of risks such as default, fraud, and insider trading, it's growing. And the question will be how investors will be protected and how the soft infrastructure will need to catch up as the market continues to evolve. And that's a theme that we're watching closely.
Thanks. And James, did many themes emerge on the research side?
Yes, it's very difficult to pick themes across so many categories and practice areas and deal types. And if I can just do a quick comparison to the Europe Awards, I think in Europe, because of the EU, that there's a little bit more of a region-wide themes in terms of regulatory trends. And you don't have that in Asia-Pacific region. It's a lot more jurisdiction-specific. Like markets like China and Australia very much drive their own trends. But to pick a few things, and these are quite global, but one of them is alternative reference rates. I think for Asia-Pacific, for the region, it's 2019 was maybe a foundational year in setting the path to move off LIBOR. And we'll see that in a couple of the deal categories. Environmental, social, and governance, ESG, another big global theme. Again, it's spoken about a lot in Europe. And in Asia-Pacific, it's maybe a little lower on the radar, but it is still very much there. And that includes sort of green bonds and other instruments. And we'll see that across a few of the categories too, and renewable projects as well. I've written down the Chinese market. It's hardly a theme, but there's a lot of innovation that is, or the market spurs a lot of innovation, particularly in cross-border financing. And as Carrie mentioned earlier, those capital inflows. But also the dynamics of the Chinese market make conventional deals maybe a little less likely. There's a lot more bespoke work that goes into that, particularly where there's a big foreign investment into the country or a foreign investor trying to establish themselves successfully in the market. And then there are lots of sort of smaller themes throughout the awards. Real estate investment trusts, REITs, that's one of them. We'll see quite a few transactions in that area. Some of the sectors were very productive. So life sciences and education and consumer finance. Islamic finance has been around for a few years as a sort of a smaller theme. And then high yield, I think, is also an interesting category. And we'll get to that when we get there.
So the theme is lots of themes, not one massive theme, I guess.
Yes.
So turning to our first category, debt and equity linked, Carrie, did you notice any themes in this category in particular?
So I mentioned the growth of China's capital markets, and that also applies to the debt markets. And this has been further highlighted this year with the inclusion of China's government bonds into benchmark indices. And that development is definitely going to be opening up a floodgate for capital inflow.
And James, what's on the shortlist?
So yeah, we've got 8 deals on the shortlist. ESG is a theme here. So we've got the LG Chem Green Bonds, which is the first global green bond offering from a chemical company, or the first green bond offering from a global chemical company. And it's also novel for other reasons. It's a dollar and euro denominated bonds, dual listed in Singapore and Frankfurt. This makes it a first of its kind from Korea. The Bank of China Macau branch secured overnight financing rate bond, amongst other things, is also the first green bond issued out of Macau. A deal that didn't make the shortlist, the Woolworths Group green bond out of Australia, is also the first issuance globally by a supermarket under the Climate Bonds Initiative framework. So quite a few ESG themes here. And another one, again, sort of alluding to the theme that Carrie has been bringing out, but there's a lot of innovation in terms of enabling Chinese PRC issuers to streamline and diversify their international debt programs. And notable here is the Agricultural Development Bank of China retail bond and the China Railway construction securities. And then as a few very clear firsts, the Korean Export-Import Bank Mexican offering, or the Vietnam Prosperity Note Program, Bharti Airtel's perpetual securities, all first for their markets. But I'll hand over to Carrie to announce the winner, because I know that she covered this in IFLR.
Yes, we did a piece on this one last year. This was the first public bond out of China and Asia that's linked to the US LIBOR replacement. And the winner is the Bank of China Macau Branch Secure Overnight Financing Rate Bond. And the winning team that worked on this deal was Ellen & Overy. There are no big surprises here. Ellen & Overy, it's always in contention, but it's always a very tight category. So congratulations to that team.
And equity capital markets, James, what have we got on the shortlist?
Yeah, so before we go into the shortlist, a quick word about the Luckin Coffee IPO. And this is, again, it echoes something that Carrie mentioned, this theme about a growing number of risks. So Luckin Coffee this year has run into some trouble, some difficulties. That became properly apparent in March, and I think there are formal consequences in April. This has all been very widely reported. We shortlisted the deal, and the IPO itself took place in May 2019. And at the time, the legal work stood out for a couple of reasons. It's a very new business model, and it was a very young company. And that entailed a lot of quite complicated work to get it listing ready. And the structure also accommodated several transactions in parallel with the IPO. And this is perhaps more relevant in terms of other future IPOs and looking at this transaction, that there was a private transaction just before the listing, a private placement that closed just after listing. These are structurally quite unusual features. But moving on to the theme, so real estate investment trusts, that's a big theme here. So the Lotte REIT out of Korea and the Embassy Office Parks REIT out of India. These are huge, complex deals all the way through the IPO process. I think Lotte REIT, the offering circular there alone, I was told, was close to 1,000 pages, which must be a record for Korea. And then another theme that's been around for quite a few years is biotech and life sciences. And then we have some quite big IPOs. So ESR Cayman or the Budweiser APAC and the Shanghai Dongzhen Automotive Finance. These all overcame quite difficult challenges to get through. And market volatility is a theme underlying all of them. And two of these transactions, the ESR and the Budweiser, were both suspended just before listing to then be taken up again and complete their listing later in the year. And that was linked to volatility and sort of market pricing issues. But yeah, Carrie, have you got any sort of extra thoughts from your side on this?
Yeah, so from an IFLR perspective, in terms of the equity markets, it's clear that the China onshore market, it's increasingly getting the big deals and the breadth and depth, it's competing with international markets. And it's also clear that new economy companies, especially technology businesses, have dominated issuances.
And who are the winners?
So the winner this year is the Budweiser APAC IPO. I don't think there'll be too many surprises there. It just had a bit of everything. And the most dramatic aspect I mentioned already, that it was suspended very late in the day. And then there was an enormous disposal, I think an $11 billion disposal of the AB InBev business in Australia. And then the IPO picked up again. That's a very unusual situation to deal with. And the winning team this year is Freshfields, which is the firm that advised the issuer on this deal. This is an award that's probably long in coming. I think the team that's led by Teresa Koh in Hong Kong there has been behind some of the quite a few interesting pieces of work in the awards over the last few years.
And congratulations to all the firms that worked on that deal and, of course, to Freshfields for the team win. So high yield, I think you both mentioned this earlier on. Carrie, is there anything you want to add before we sort of get into it?
I think there weren't clear themes in terms of IFLR coverage, and I think the deal shortlist reflects that. The only thing I would point out is that just 3 years ago, this category in the awards was dependent on there being enough high yield transactions to produce a strong shortlist. And here we have 8 very strong deals, and that's the most remarkable thing about the list, how much this field has developed over recent years. And also, this development may be a bit ominous given the environment. There's been a huge ballooning of corporate debt over recent years globally, both investment grade and non-investment grade. And that's all going to be under a lot of pressure right now.
What about you, James?
So yes, as Carrie said, I mean, it is a mixed bag in terms of themes, but the big story is that high yield has, as a product, has developed so much over the last few years. And here we have in the shortlist 8 very strong transactions, and there were quite a few others that we could have included. And some of the deals here illustrate this growth of the high yield product. So, for example, the Bright Scholar offering and the V Credit offering, both of those are high yield offerings by new types of issuers. So it's high yield moving into new sectors and diversifying. And then we've got some other quite interesting bits of work here. So the Cerba Dynamic offering is a first in the region. It's the first US dollar high yield Sukuk offering out of Asia. Another example here of high yield moving into new areas is the Lippo Malls Indonesia Retail Trust. It feeds into the REIT theme, but it's a new issue out of Singapore and out of Indonesia. And then further down the line, interestingly, there's another innovation in the China Grand Automotive Services, the exchange and issues. So this is something that's interesting for sort of PRC issuers who have directly issued into the offshore market, and it's a way for them to managing their existing bonds. So we've got new bonds and innovations further down the line. But to come to the winner, so this year, the winner is the Medco High Yield Bond. This is quite an interesting deal, particularly as regards outbound M&A from Asia. And there are a lot of new features here under Indonesian or English and US law. And the winning team this year is Sidley Austin. It's a very well-respected practice, and they were pivotal to the structure in the Medco High Yield offering.
Congratulations to all the winners there. So moving on to M&A, I know our market reform winner this year relates to this category. Carrie, can you tell us a bit more about our winner?
Yeah, so the winner of the 2020 Market Reform Award is Anna Wu, the first chair of the Hong Kong Competition Commission. And rather than just picking one regulatory development, the award recognizes her in establishing the commission as an authority in the market and defining its role and operational mandate. And she's also a very outspoken individual in terms of developing the regulatory framework. So we're very pleased to announce her as the recipient.
Congratulations, Anna. And James, the deal shortlist, please.
So yes, again, 8 strong deals on the shortlist. No broad themes, particularly. Insurance seems to be a theme that ran through the shortlist and beyond. There are quite a few transactions in that area. And on the shortlist, we have FWD Group's acquisition of SCB Life Assurance and New World's acquisition of FD Life Insurance. But as I said, there were others as well. And lots of innovations in lots of little areas, so enhancing deal security, warranty and indemnity insurance, price mechanisms, minority shareholder rights, and some regulatory issues. And in China, the theme that I think mentioned right at the very beginning, the Heineken and the China Resources transaction, and the DHL and SF Holdings transactions, these are two very bespoke corporate agreements with public M&A aspects, private M&A aspects, and a lot of heavy work on governance and some commercial aspects, licensing. And it's also sort of lastly worth mentioning the Udena Corporation, China Telecommunications Corporation transaction, which was completed under a completely new licensing framework. But the winner this year is the take private of EHI. Is probably one of the most dramatic or drama-filled transactions of the year. And the M&A team of the year this year is Weil Gotshal that advised the buying consortium on this transaction.
Okay, and private equity, what's on the shortlist?
Yes, and much the same as M&A in that there are no sort of broad overarching themes. I think the shortlist shows that private equity is at a stage of development in the region where it still can break into new markets. KKR's acquisition of LCY in Taiwan and Warburg Pincus's acquisition of Converge ICT Solutions in the Philippines, these deals make a big enough splash to have a big influence on resetting terms and documentation and conventions for big private equity investments. And then also Blackstone's acquisition of Ayumi Pharmaceuticals in Japan. It's not a first in Japan in terms of sort of big private equity, but it was for Blackstone at that level. And then there's also some work here in relation to variable interest entities, so VIE structures. This appears in a few of the categories. Actually, the Bright Scholar Education High Yield worked on this as well. But here it's Ping An's acquisition of Tutor Group, which is an interesting use, aside from everything else, of a strategic with a private equity arm and using that to make a strategic transaction. And then there are quite a few deals that didn't make it onto the shortlist that were quite interesting. So Brookfield's acquisition of Hotel Leela Ventures in India was one of those. But I'll hand over to Carrie to announce the winner.
The winner this year is KKR's acquisition of LCY. And the winning team is Simpson Thacher, the firm that led on the deal.
Okay, congratulations. So project finance, what were your sort of experiences in the research here?
So as with previous years, Indonesia and Vietnam have always generated quite pioneering transactions in that the deals there are always exploring new financing structures, and particularly in Vietnam, constantly testing the framework. So this year, a deal that didn't make onto the shortlist was the Van Phong One thermal power plant project that tested lots of areas of Vietnam's framework. And then the Mong Duong 2 refinancing, which is sort of one of the highlights really in the awards, and is interesting from a regional perspective. And I think a second theme maybe is offshore wind, and this is a theme as well in Europe. And here the big story, I guess, is Taiwan. There are two very big deals on the shortlist relating to the offshore wind market in Taiwan. And perhaps a third thing to point out, and this is in contrast maybe to Europe, is that the petrochemicals, oil and gas power plants, that sector are still a big driving force in developing and promoting new financing structures. And this year, off the back of that comment, the winner is the Project Rapid transaction, which is this vast Saudi Aramco and Petronas project. And the winning team this year is Milbank. Milbank has a very strong practice relating to the Philippines, and its project financing team is always very highly rated and well-respected, and here it advised the lenders on the Project Rapid financing.
Great. Well, congratulations to Milbank and to all the firms on Project Rapid. Carrie, what about restructuring?
This is always a really interesting area. Aside from the legal challenges, it's the emotional intelligence of legal teams that's really tested. How do you reach agreements in such fraught situations, especially when there are state parties involved, litigation, and many different diverging views? And it's also the area that's really tests every aspect of the legal framework of past deals. There are cases on the shortlist with significant precedential value, such as China Agrotech, Kimberley Hotel, and the Akebono Turnaround ADR. They have implications for debt restructuring approaches, as well as in terms of the use of parallel schemes, receivership issues, and many other things. And China Agrotech and Kimberley Hotel, from what I understand, were really thorny cases. So James, anything to add?
Not particularly. I think the one thing to note is that there weren't any sort of big Chapter 11 cases this year. This is something that we have seen in previous years. So perhaps the theme is focus on national restructuring frameworks and workout frameworks. I think Akebono is quite a good example of that.
That's an interesting point there. Do you think that's in line with the maturity of these legal systems?
It might well be. This has been a very busy category for the last few years. Another example, so parallel schemes, the use of parallel schemes, that's something that has come up again and again and is being tested in lots of different ways. So it might well be a reflection of the maturing market in the region. Yeah. And I guess just to wrap this category up, we'll announce the winner, the deal winner. And this is the Max Power Group restructuring. This had a fair share of drama, and it had to really overcome a huge list of obstacles to get a company that was in a lot of trouble. And at the end, it emerged as a going concern. And it's an interesting case for the region's energy sector, I think, going forward. The winning team here is Alan and Overy. And this is a team that has grown, actually, I think grew quite a lot last year. And it's impressed on quite a number of complex restructuring issues, Kimberley Hotel being one of those.
Our final category, structured finance and securitization. James, what are your thoughts here?
So this is all very much in line with the opening up of the capital markets in China that Carrie spoke about. Quite a few of the transactions here reflect that, the developments in securitization and structured finance in the Chinese market. A couple of other highlights. So there's the ANZ covered bonds, which reflects the alternative reference rates theme. And this was a really strong precedent deal for Australia, but also beyond, for the use of SONIA to move off LIBOR. And just another transaction here that's worth mentioning is the First Coast RE2 catastrophe bonds. So Singapore has made a lot of effort to become a global domicile for risk transfer products, here specifically catastrophe bonds, CAT bonds. It's not the first deal out of Singapore. I think that goes to Insurance Australia Group, which sponsored the first CAT bond issued in Singapore. But this is the first listed CAT bond. So it's the first that had to produce an offering circular that had to disclose all the risks, that was scrutinized by investors. And it had several other complex structural features in the transactions. And then we also have some quite interesting work out of India as well. But the winner this year, and this is perhaps a little more obscure than some of these other transactions, is the People Fund P2P loan securitization. And you can see a write-up on the website about this. The winning team of the year this year is King & Wood Mallesons. Yes, and King & Wood Mallesons have won this a few times, and they had a very interesting year in 2019.
Okay, congratulations to them. So before we sort of wrap up with the winners of the International Firm Awards, we do have another individual award, and this one for in-house contribution. James, would you like to announce that one?
Yes, I'll just briefly announce, and I think we've got more information on the website, but the winner this year for the in-house contribution award is David Chu, who is the general counsel of Credit Suisse in Hong Kong. So congratulations to David. Mm.
And the winners of our International Firm Awards, Carrie, do you want to start us off?
The winner of the offshore law firm was Conyers, and the winner of the regional law firm was King & Wood Mallesons.
Okay, I'll announce the next two. The winner of the India practice for international law firms, and this is the inaugural India practice award this year, is Latham & Watkins. And coming on to one of the big ones, the China practice award, the winning team this year is Clifford Chance.
The winner of the US law firm was Simpson Thatcher and Bartlett.
Okay, and the big one, International Law Firm of the Year Award, this year goes to Alan Overy. So huge congratulations to that team. I think they appeared quite a lot throughout the shortlist.
Yes.
So well done. So that about wraps up our podcast. We want to say again a massive congratulations to all the winners. There are obviously a lot more categories that will be presented online and in a dedicated awards supplement in the IFLR summer edition of the magazine. And there's obviously a lot more detail in the online write-ups. So please do check it out. Is there anything else you wanted to add, James, Carrie?
I'll just add a really big thank you to every firm and every lawyer or clients that took part in the research. And also a quick note that we will be working with podcasts a little bit more and using them to cover with a little bit more depth some of the work and themes. So do get in touch if you're interested in taking part at all.
And do subscribe to the IFLR channel to make sure you don't miss an update. And you can do that, I believe, on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you're listening. So massive thank you to everyone. Keep safe and keep an eye out for our continuing coverage on IFLR.com. Thanks very much.